We're going to move on to Gunnar Nelson. You remember them from the 1990s, early 90s. They had, I think it was in 1990, they released, or 89, After the Rain. And they immediately landed a number one hit right out of the gate. Can you imagine how cool that is? Well, they come from a dynasty in the entertainment world, the Nelson family. Of course, Ozzy and Harriet Nelson. They dominated the 50s and part of the 60s. Rick Nelson, also known as Ricky Nelson when he was younger, was a pop icon, a rock pioneer. And more importantly, what a lot of people don't realize is he was a pioneer of country rock. And I do want to touch on that because the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree, so to speak, with his twin sons, Gunnar and Matthew, when it comes to the country rock groove. So we're going to welcome Gunnar back to the show. We've had him on in the past a number of times, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him, especially when you realize he's got some Indiana roots. We'll talk all about that, get Gunnar on the horn. But first, let's take you back to that first number one song, Love and Affection. And you just can't not feel good listening to that song. Wow. Hard to believe it's been 30 years. Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection. Debut music from the band Nelson, fronted by the Nelsons, Gunnar and Matthew. And great stuff. Went to number one right out of the gate. And those guys are still out there doing it. They've got several albums and a new project that we're going to talk about. And you can also check them out. For those of you that are still wearing your hearts on your sleeve, or maybe you forgot something, or that special someone on Valentine's Day, we're going to tell you how you can make it up to them. Celebrate Valentine's Day up until, I think it's day after tomorrow. Anyway, the guy you heard on there, Gunnar Nelson and Matthew, have both been on this program in the past. Gunnar more so than Matthew, and I'm very happy to welcome him back. Gunnar, are you with us?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Yes,
it's
I'm here.
Going. Yeah, I apologize again. We were supposed to have you on a couple weeks ago when we got hit with that snowstorm, and I don't know how it was in Nashville for you guys, but, man, everything was stopped here.
Well, yeah, I know. Same thing here, only because we're not used to getting really any snow to speak of, so we don't have any of the equipment. And, we had an ice storm and stuff, and, you know, it just made everybody kind of park themselves at home, but it was nothing like what you guys went through. It was crazy up there.
It was rough. In fact, last week, I think, we were supposed to have Brian Wheat from Tesla on, and he texted in. He's like, dude, he goes, I'm stuck in Texas on a flight delay, so we're going to have to pass, so we got to reschedule him as well. This snow
is... Man, if he was stuck in Texas, he's probably still there.
Probably. It's interesting, and for the listeners here that may have missed our past conversations over the years, and I don't want to dwell on too much, but you guys have Indiana roots. Your grandfather, the football great Tom Harmon, father of Mark Harmon, of course, who we all know from NCIS, but Tom was from Gary, Indiana. And
yes, he was from Gary. He was, and actually that's what made him tough, because it is a tough town, and it was the kind of place he said when you played sandlot ball as a kid, you had to fight your way. The winning team had to fight their way off the field.
Well, he lettered in four different letters at Gary. He went on to play for Michigan. The family moved to Rensselaer, which is a little more rural. And I didn't understand the move. I don't know if you know the history there, why they left Gary and went to Rensselaer, which is kind of a farming community.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure, and probably like I did. You know, you have enough of the city, and it finally just kind of gets to you, and you just want the wide open spaces. But, you know, he came from a big family, and you're right, he lettered in four different sports at Horace Mann in high school, and still to this day holds a bunch of state records in track, in basketball. I mean, the guy was a machine, but it was really when he started playing ball at Michigan that I mean, it won the Heisman Trophy in 1940, two-time All-American, and this is back in the day when they didn't have face masks, and believe me, his nose looked like it.
And back then, those guys played for the love of the game. Today, they're all playing for the multi-million-dollar contracts. I got to say, I have so much respect for some of the earlier athletes who went out there because, A, they were good at it, and, B, they loved it, just like you guys love music, and that's why you're still doing what you're doing.
Oh, thanks. Well, I agree. I remember having a conversation with Grandpa Tom before he passed. You know, in his latter years, he was actually the voice of the L.A. Raiders. He became a great sportscaster, and I remember having a conversation with him because he was actually casting for the Raiders really during their golden years, and he was just starting to hear about these contracts that the players were getting and having to report on them. And I remember how stunned he was at the dollars they were talking about, because as you mentioned, they really did play for the love of the game back in the day. Like, even the professional ball players on the most successful teams had a gig that they would do when it wasn't football season. Like, a lot of the guys would, you know, work at a car lot or something like that just to make rent. And now the game has really changed quite a bit.
Speaking of games changing, it's changed a lot since you and Matthew first came out in the business. You came in when vinyl was starting to go out. You came in when grunge was coming in and the arena sound, the multi-layered, well-produced hard rock sound was starting to take a back seat to the almost punkish grunge sound. And now we're back, full circle. Vinyl is back, and you guys are back with another project. So it's been an interesting 30 years. Now, 2020 was not just a terrible year for everyone because of COVID, but it was a year that everything stopped, music stopped. And it happened on the milestone year, your 30th anniversary of releasing Love and Affection and After the Rain. So I got to wonder, since you kind of got robbed over celebrating that on the road with your fans, are you going to kind of reboot that in 2021 and celebrate this year instead?
Well, we talked to the record company, and that would be Universal Music now. They actually inherited the Geffen Records catalog that we were on Geffen Records back in the day. And because 2020 was such an insufferable dumpster fire, they're giving a hall pass to all of their musicians that had anniversaries planned on 2020, and the industry in general is kind of squinting, and they're being cool with the fact that, you know, a lot of those people who had a 2020 anniversary are pushing it to 2021. They're still accepting that. So I have a feeling you'll be getting a definitive Nelson Greatest Hits record this year through Universal. We're talking to them right now, and you know, trying to make contract make sense. And if it does, then people are going to be getting that music.
That's great. Are you going to do it on vinyl, I hope?
Well, actually, we did release, we re-released the After the Rain record 3 years ago on collector grade Het 180 gram vinyl. And Matthew got to go into the studio, the Capitol Studios, and remaster the album. And it sounds amazing. All the bass response and the punch that we actually heard originally through the big speakers at Cherokee Recording Studios, we finally hear again. After all of these years, technology has really improved to such a degree that we could do that. And that sounds great. But I think what we'd be doing this year is, yes, releasing on vinyl as well as digital mediums too. But it would be, for the first time, a greatest hits record that spans all 30 years of our career. Because you mentioned we had multiple records. We
right.
have. We did those first two records that people might know of from back in the day, After the Rain and Because They Can. Those were released on Geffen. But we also had 18 other albums that we've released on our own Stone Canyon Records label. And this would be the first time that we could actually have a definitive piece of work that would have all of the singles from all of those records from the entire career.
I didn't realize it was 18. I mean, I'm familiar with Lightning Strikes Twice, Silence is Broken, Peace Out, which was a great record from about 6 years ago.
Oh, thank you, man.
Good stuff.
We have Before the Rain. We have Life. We have Imaginator. We have several live recordings. It's pretty exciting, but you know, it's kind of you always want to take advantage of those anniversary years. And this has been this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really difficult time, unprecedented difficult time for small business owners as well. And basically, that's what musicians are. That's what we do. And, you know, for most of us who have had hits starting back in the day, you know, we were actually going out there earning our living doing concerts. And what do you do when your entire business model is predicated on going out and connecting with people live and going to do that? You have to pivot. You have to figure out something to do. You mentioned you kind of foreshadowed a Valentine's Day special that we did recently with an outfit called Meat Hook. It's basically a glorified Zoom thing, but it's a cool show. We did it on Valentine's Day. It's available for people for the next couple of days. But that's what a lot of us musicians have been doing, is virtual concerts and pretty much, you know, like cameo videos, anything that we can do to take care of our families. But it looks like, fortunately, we're going to start doing shows again. Matthew and I did our first show of 2021 just 2 days ago down in Florida, and things are starting to open up and people are starting to relax, thankfully.
I just produced my first show back last Saturday, and we're at 50% capacity, but we sold it out. Hated to turn people away, but, you know, we got to do what's safe so we can keep moving forward. And I'm glad to hear you guys are back out, too.
No, I thank you so much. And, you know, look, bottom line is, Tom, safety's an illusion. Life is a contact sport. It sucks, but it's the truth. And,
right.
You know, you can be as careful as you can, but, you know, at what cost? You know, we're all in the connection business. We're not in the music business. We're not in the radio business. Our job is, when things get tough like they did in 2020, it's your job and my job to step up for our fans out there that count on us, to make them feel better, to connect them with great memories, to make them feel centered and connected to that time when they felt 10 feet tall and bulletproof with our music and the music that you play and the stories that you tell. And that's been the most frustrating thing for us, is that we normally do that one-on-one, and we love doing that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was really encouraging a couple of days ago. It was weird playing to an audience that was wearing face masks, I have to say. It felt like I was at a doctor's convention. That was tough. But, you know, look, baby steps and all. Look, I really don't care. As long as people feel comfortable and they want to come down and check out some rock and roll, we're going to give it to them.
Right. Now, with the Valentine's show, did you do that with your band? How did you do that virtually? Were you guys like 6 feet apart on stage? I mean, how did it work?
No. We don't do that. First off, Matthew and I have already had this. Our families have had it. Everyone's already had it. We can't get it from anybody. We can't give it to anybody. So that's never been a factor for us, fortunately. But, I mean, with something like this, look, I'll tell you what, Tom, Nelson has really always been me and Matthew.
Right.
We've always played with some great musicians. But the alpha and omega for us has always been the two guys sitting down playing together and vocalizing. And that's how we write our songs. You know, when we're putting things together, if they translate great with just the two guys, we know that we're onto something. And that's what we did. And we did this particular concert. Obviously, the creative theme about this was love songs, obviously, that we've done.
Right.
And boy, that hour just kind of blew by. And it was really cool, too, to be able to interact with fans and in real time get their requests and do all that. So we had a kind of like a framework of what we were going to do, but we let the moment kind of dictate, you know, what was going to happen, what the fans wanted, and the final product. Yes, we did it live, but we were able to record it and you know, offer it up for a couple of days too. But the final product actually turned out great. It's really, really cool. It's well lit, well shot, sounds great. And fortunately for me, I took this COVID time to build a live venue that's really telegenic in the top floor of my house. So, you know, I have a feeling we're going to be doing more of these concerts. And it's also a cool thing, too. Nothing is a substitute for going to see a show live. However, right, we can be more consistent and put more stuff out for the fans by being able to integrate this as well. So even when things open up and things are back to normal, we're probably still going to have some of this element in there as well, just so we can be more prolific.
Right. Now, you mentioned your live venue in your house. Is it similar to what our mutual friend Jim Peterick has with Jam Lab, where you can go in there and it looks like a full-fledged studio and it feels like one, but yet it's your own little playground?
You know, first off, Jim is a genius, and I love him. I mean, he's like my favorite person as well as my favorite writer. But, you know, Jim kind of cheats. He actually really does have a world-class studio in his house.
Right.
You know, I mean, he really does. And you know, the guy that wrote Eye of the Tiger should have a real studio in his house. But, you know, I mean, he lives it and he breathes it. So for him, doing a show and making it look good through Jam Lab is pretty easy. For us, Matthew and I actually really had to do a build out. When I bought my home, there was an area of the house that was kind of like, I don't know, they called it a bonus room or whatever. And, I mean, I suppose, you know, if a family didn't get along, they would have like that away room they could go and watch football games on a big screen on. But for us, we all get along. That room wasn't being used. And so we put some barnwood on the walls. We built a stage. We put professional lighting in there and built a band room. And it looks like the Gibson room in Vegas. It looks really, really cool. And it's been really working for us when we're filming ourselves lately.
And that's where the Valentine's special was made?
Yep, that's where it was made.
Looking forward to seeing that. And again, can you link to that through MatthewandGunnarNelson.com?
That's all you have to do. And I'm going to warn all the fans. If it sucks, it's Matthew's fault.
Sounds like a typical brother comment there. Another thing you guys have, and again, folks, you can only watch this special for about another 2 or 3 days. So go online, MatthewandGunnarNelson.com, and find out the ending date of it, and watch it right away because it's definitely worth checking out, especially now that we know the background behind it. But something new that does not surprise me, having talked to both you and Matthew a number of times, and we have had conversations about the fact that I've been a big fan of your dad for years, and we both agree that he pretty much single-handedly pioneered the country rock sound with the Stone Canyon Band before the Eagles, before everybody else. In fact, Meisner was in his band. But you guys are now stepping out. The apple hasn't fallen far from the tree with this new project, First Born Sons, I'm hearing about. Now, I don't know if you're willing to talk about that yet, but I've heard
sure.
That's your new thing. So tell me about it.
Well, hey, look, I always look for the pony in the room full of you-know-what, you know. And so, like I said, about 2020, the one thing it did give us was the opportunity to go into the studio to write songs, record songs that we've been wanting to do for years. You know, normally Matt and I do about 100 shows a year,
right.
And that really does keep us gone. But this past year, it has been a real blessing to finally put First Born Sons together. It's great American country rock. It is a natural continuance of what our father was doing with the Stone Canyon Band. It is very guitar-oriented. It's best described as Joe Walsh-era Eagles meets Lynyrd Skynyrd. That's what we're doing.
Wow. Tasty. Now, obviously,
yeah, man.
These are original music, original songs, correct?
Oh, yeah. We've actually been writing for the project for about 15 years. I've got over 200 songs for it. But we actually have the first 12 professionally recorded. We, you know, I did the preliminary mix, then the legendary mixer, Chris Lord-Alge, did the final mixes on it. And, man, this is ready for the world. We're probably going to be dropping our first single in summer, and it's going to be a song called Saturday Night.
Okay.
And it's definitely a top-down, you know, hand-in-the-wind kind of summer song. And it's going to be the beginning of a completely new chapter for us that I'm really, really looking forward to, that kind of pulls from everything that people dug from the work that we did with Nelson, as well as we've been doing that Ricky Nelson Remembered show that we've been doing for the last 20 years or so. So it's just really, honestly, a natural evolution of the two brothers singing together, lots of guitars, great songwriting. And it's just straight up American music.
Now, you mentioned the Ricky Nelson Remembered, and that was what I was going to address here. You basically kept your father's legacy and his music and his original songs alive by recording them and performing them. And now that this is kind of the extension of that, will you be retiring Ricky Nelson Remembered and instead coming out with Firstborn Sons and maybe blending the two, your originals and his originals?
Well, actually, you know, that's a great question. The intention is going to be this next year really shifting over from the Ricky Nelson Remembered shows that we love to do to doing Firstborn Sons shows. And the Ricky Nelson Remembered show will be for special occasions, you know, obviously anniversaries and corporate events and stuff. And, you know, if it's appropriate, we'll be doing that. But our priority is really going to be Firstborn Sons. That's what we're going to do.
Okay, and you said the first single dropping in summer. Do you anticipate this being a duo type show, or are you going to have backing accompaniment?
Okay, you're going to hear this first.
Okay,
okay. I haven't told this, but the answer to your question is yes, because we're actually going to have a virtual band.
Ooh.
We're filming everybody and everything, and taking this. There's a huge visual component, a video component for what we do for Ricky Nelson Remembered, and we've really kind of mastered that. So Matthew and I are going to be up front and center live, and our band is going to be behind us, and it's going to be virtual, intercut with the lyric videos and lots of visuals. It's going to be pretty interesting. It's kind of going to be kind of like our version of what Ed Sheeran has been doing in stadiums for the last three or four years. But no one else is doing it. No one else can. So it's going to kind of look like the modern Everly Brothers.
Wow, that is amazing. And it's great that you compare it to the Everlys, because a lot of my listeners grew up with the Everlys. They were the ultimate harmony duo of all time. I mean, they inspired...
There's nothing like family, man. There's really nothing like family. And Phil and Don were obviously just legendary at what they did. They sounded like a human harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
And the only edge that Matt and I have on those guys is that we split from the same cell, Tom. We're twins. I mean, like, our physical equipment is the same. So, I mean, it really is a kind of a cool thing. And that whole twin telepathy, there's something to that, you know, that connection that we have.
Right.
Matt and I tend to screw up at the same time on stage without being able to see each other. It just kind of happens that way. So we're really, really connected. But with this new material, it's never been more evident than it is in this. It's really, I mean, truly synced up. And it feels like, you know, a couple really close brothers doing their thing. And what we want to do is just kind of emphasize what we do that is unique, that no one else can do.
Mm-hmm.
And realized in putting this project together that every break that we've ever gotten in our lives, from getting signed to Geffen Records back in the day to the biggest concert we ever played was to 68,000 people in Erie, Pennsylvania back in the day, just me and Matthew with two acoustic guitars, no band. And we realized that, you know, maybe God wants us to actually really kind of emphasize that portion of what we do. And, you know, our backing is going to be what it's going to be, but that's the emphasis is going to be on the two brothers.
Well, one of the things that makes you also extremely unique, unlike the Everlys, I worked with them in 1988 doing some shows, and they were brilliant on stage, but they would come on and off opposite ends of the stage and go to independent trailers. They didn't really like each other too much, or at least it certainly came off that way. You and Matthew are extremely close. You always compliment each other musically, personally. When you talk about each other, you can tell there's this genuine connection and love. With the Everlys, with the Davies brothers and the Kinks, with the Black Crowes, I mean, you name Oasis, all the brother groups out there, they all fight like brothers. You guys have a chemistry.
We are twins. Remember, we split from the same cell. We shared a womb once upon a time, you know, so there's going to be some difference in that. Now, it does work. For every similarity between me and Matthew, we actually have a difference. You know, Matthew is far more introverted. He is kind of like the details guy. I'm the meat and potatoes guy. I'm the driver. I'm always in working, and I love the studio, and I love writing, and I love that. And Matt just wants to go out and play shows. And so between the two of us, we have a really great balance between melody and energy and stuff. And it works. And we've been through a lot. Like we all, look, all your listeners, all of us, we've all been through a lot in our lives. But I can honestly say I don't know how I would have handled life in general without having my twin as my best friend, because we've really needed each other at some pretty pivotal times in our lives. I mean, I know Phil and Don, you're right. You're not exaggerating. Separate trailers. It was in the contract. Separate dressing rooms. Different wings of the theaters they would play.
Yep.
I would hear that, and it was just crazy to me, because I can't imagine doing that. What a shame, I should say. You know, that such great work can be done by people who hate each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, you know, for me and Matt, you know, the one thing that we always say is we've never really felt like we've ever been in a band, so to speak, and we always thought that camaraderie would feel great. But the flip side of that is we don't have to worry about, you know, being backstabbed by each other, because it just would never happen. I trust Matthew implicitly, and he does the same. And there's some freedom to that. We don't have to worry about the worldly stuff that most people in a band have to worry about. Because we're always going to be there for each other, no matter what. And it leaves us free to connect with fans and to make great music.
Talking about family, much was made when you first started, and it still is today, of your family history and legacy. And for listeners that don't understand what I'm talking about, Ozzy and Harriet Nelson, pivotal icons of the 50s and the early 60s, television's first family. Their dad, Ricky, grew up, became a teen idol because of a girlfriend that liked Elvis, and he got jealous and made records and became a pioneer in country rock. And this has been the legacy of the Nelsons. This is third generation, maybe fourth, of the Nelson legacy in entertainment. And in speaking with others over the years, other sons and daughters of famous entertainers, from Frank Sinatra Jr. to Julian Lennon to Jacob Dylan to Lisa Marie Presley, often having that kind of impressive family legacy is a double-edged sword. What's it been like being third generation Nelsons, coming from a family that is truly the first family of entertainment in America?
Well, it's our normal. You know, I mean, I've been asked that question quite a bit, Tom, and to me, I don't know any different. You know, when I grew up, it was during our dad's Stone Canyon band phase of his life, where, I mean, I was surrounded by people who had an acoustic guitar in their hand were writing a song. And I thought everybody in the world could harmonize. You know, I thought everybody in the world was a songwriter. And, you know, I mean, again, my normal was people like, you know, Bob Dylan always over at the house, or Mama Cass Elliott being my babysitter, or, George Harrison being my next door neighbor. That's just what it was for us.
Wow.
And I didn't realize until later on in life that, you know, that wasn't really a normal childhood. But what was really great about that, I suppose it's like being raised a Manning, if you were a football family and you wanted to pursue football. Now, each Manning clearly did all the work themselves. They made their own marks. They created their own records. They did their own thing, right? But they had the social proof around them. Like, you know, Peyton growing up with Archie, you had the social proof that it was possible to do that at the highest of levels and really achieve, and it raised the bar for you. You know, they say you play tennis with a great tennis player, your game is going to improve. And for us, we just, you know, the bar that was set, to me, it was just kind of what was normal. And yeah, didn't really think about it until later on in life. And then when we actually released Nelson, we came out with that project, it was very, very difficult to get signed because of, you know, accusations of perhaps nepotism. And there were a lot of sons and daughters of that had released things in the past that actually were horrible.
Right.
So it was very, very difficult to get signed. So that was also a blessing too. It made us work harder on the image, on the songs themselves, and be outstanding that way. So every single hindrance has been a real blessing in the long run, because it just makes you work harder. It makes you, be unique and different and want to be. And also knowing that your ancestors set the bar so high, you know, you're not going to blow off any meetings. You're not going to blow off rehearsals. You're going to actually work really, really hard because you know that your ancestors would expect that from you.
The work ethic of the Nelsons is legendary. And I got to say, I read something, or maybe we talked about in the past. I just know it stuck in my head. When you and Matthew had already had your record deal, you already were working with the label, yet you went out and started busking at radio stations. You drop in and bring your guitars and play on the air, and you did a convention that way of radio people, and you took that upon yourself to make sure that you didn't get lost in the cracks. Now, is that a true story, or am I just reimagining that?
It is. It's actually pretty cool.
Okay.
Again, we're back to the two guys with the two acoustic guitars, but when we released our first record, After the Rain, we were not the priority band of Geffen Records for that quarter. They actually chose another band to bless with all of their radio favors and their money and all that stuff, and that was a band called Little Caesar. And so Matt and I were trying to, we were fighting for air in that kind of environment, so we really had that against us at the time. Also at the time, too, that previous year, that whole Milli Vanilli scandal had happened, where Frank Farian had hired a couple of good-looking guys from a German club to kind of front a studio project he'd put together. And those dudes got caught pretending to really be the singers, and they like basically their tape skipped when they were lip syncing, and their career was over. So Matt and Gunnar come along, and we look like Milli Vanilli, you know, the two guys with the long blonde hair and the image and all that stuff. It was a lot for people to absorb. So really, with the nepotism and all that, we were truly considered, you know, we were kind of like treated as guilty until proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured that the only way around that was to really strip it all down and show people, especially the folks at radio, what it was that we did. So we spent an entire year going to all the smallest radio stations all across the country and building and growing to the bigger and bigger stations and showing up at, there was a convention, their radio convention for the listeners out there called the Bobby Poe Convention. And that's really kind of where all the radio guys get together from all over the country. And they talk about the up and coming back bands and stuff. The record companies push their up and coming bands, but Geffen Records again didn't believe in us. So They didn't even have a suite at the convention, so Matt and I decided to open up our acoustic guitar cases at the base of the elevator in the lobby where all the radio guys and the record company guys were going to have to pass us to go up to their suite that we weren't invited to.
Brilliant.
And we just sat there all day, and we busked, and we played, and you know, basically when our single dropped about a couple weeks later for Love and Affection, all those radio guys were like, weren't those the two chicks in the lobby that we passed when we were going up to the suite? And it actually really did work for us.
Wow. I thought that we had talked about that story at some point, and it stuck in my head. I wanted to verify that it wasn't just something I had read or made
no,
up.
No. That's the truth. That is the truth.
Well, speaking of family, let's go back. Since we don't have the new stuff to play yet, let's play something off the Like Father, Like Sons, and your treatment of your dad's probably biggest original hit, which was Garden Party. We're going to play this, and we will be back with you to talk some more. I got a lot of questions for you, Gunnar.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friends, a chance to share old memories and play our songs. People came from miles around, everyone was there. Yoko, Ron, Walrus, there was magic in the air. And over in a corner, much to my surprise, Mr. Hughes hid Dylan's shoes wearing his disguise. But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please songs. I thought that's why they came, but no one heard the music. We didn't look the same. I said hello.
Doesn't remember that song? Story about the garden party and Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
And, wow. And that was a rule to live by. I mean, your dad did his thing. He had all the hits in the 50s and the 60s, and he tried to follow his own muse and evolve, and people didn't want it. And I respect him so much for that, that he just said, the heck with everybody. I'm making the music I'm feeling. And you and Matthew were doing the same thing. I mean, you could have done Love and Affection ad nauseum over and over and over and had several hits, yet you followed your muse. You evolved together and have given us some great music, whether the general public has put it all on the radar or not. You've left a legacy of your own.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Well, I figure that, look, if we connect with firstborn son, the natural thing is going to be for people to want to go back to the blog, and those songs are there.
Right.
You know, everything's there.
Now, obviously, you and Matt were very young when your dad passed in 1985, but old enough to have had a great relationship. That comes through in your interviews, your music. What lessons did you guys learn, or you particularly, I guess you can't speak for Matthew, but what lessons did you learn from him that you carry with you and apply to your lives today? And I guess that would be both professionally and personally. What parts of Rick are in you?
Well, we've distilled it down to three rules. We call it Nelson's Rule of Three. Okay, it's what we live by, and it's what we learn from our pop. Okay, the first rule is be undeniably good. Okay, that's number one. Be undeniably good, and the word good has several different meanings, and it means both. It means all of the different definitions. Okay, be undeniably good. Number two, always keep your sense of humor.
Okay.
Because you're going to need it. And number three, don't be a jerk. Those are the three. That's it. Be undeniably good. All right. Keep your sense of humor, and don't be a jerk. And if you can do that, then, you know, it's kind of like the key to happiness, at least in our business.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you lose yourself, I mean, there's a lot to laugh at. And if you can't laugh at yourself, boy, you're sunk.
Right.
And, you know, for us, we're Nelsons, man. We're good through and through. Even though there are people out there committed to destroying the nuclear family, we are the nuclear family. We're proud of it.
Right.
So, I mean, we really live this stuff, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world that you're not going to see me virtue signaling for and catering to. I'm not going to do it. That's not where I come from. It's not my family. And I don't believe that's where America should be headed. So that's that. And the third thing is really simply, I'm just not going to be a jerk, you know, and we've never done that. And there are a lot of people in our business that you know, their heads get too big for their helmets, and you know, next thing you know, they're insufferable to be around. But Grandpa Ozzy always said, arrogance accompanies incompetence. So I've always kept that in mind. And, you know, growing up with Beatles coming over to my house, and they were the nicest people in the world, I always laughed when I would go to radio conventions or you know, those combination shows that radio stations throw. And Matt and I would show up, and, you know, whatever the promoter wants us to do, we'll do. It's like, that's cool. You know, we're here to make people happy. And then you'd see, like, the flavor of the minute, you know, showing up with their entourage, and they'd be insufferable. And, you know, it always makes me snicker because I always remember that one thing. It's like, look, I you know, I was hanging out with Paul McCartney last week, and he was the nicest guy in the world. So what's your excuse?
Right.
You know,
right. It's funny you mentioned the rules of Nelson, because when you said that, I automatically flashed to your uncle Mark Harmon and his Gibbs rules on NCIS. Yeah. You know, there is no such rule number 13. No such thing as coincidence. I mean, it's
That's
funny.
Right. So rule number 26: never leave home without a knife. Right. Well, Matt and I haven't been smacked on the back of the head yet, Tom, so everything's going okay there. But, he does so great. You're mentioning our uncle, Mark Harmon. That's our mom's brother, for the listeners out there.
Right.
And, boy, he talk about a guy with a work ethic. All right, this is a guy that was a starting quarterback for UCLA. Obviously, his father was the legend Tom Harmon that we were talking about, so, you know, big shoes to fill. And he just decided that, you know, his passion was acting, and he's been working on that his entire life, and now he produces and writes and stars in Planet Earth's most successful television show. Based on syndication, the amount of eyeballs watching it, NCIS actually has that. It holds that crown right now, and I couldn't be more proud of Uncle Mark. He really, honestly, is the hardest working guy I've ever seen.
And he's producing all the spinoffs as well. He's executive producer of everything you see on TV, it seems. I mean, his name's constantly
it's crazy.
Up there.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got to be part vampire. I don't know where he finds any of the time, but he's incredibly disciplined. You know, he grew up in an era where you had people, fortunately, he turned me on to, like the legendary coach for UCLA, John Wooden. You know, I was blessed to be able to go to John Wooden's basketball camp as a kid. And for the listeners out there, this is a coach that actually taught incredibly successful human beings from a principle-based teaching theory. So he had something called the Pyramid of Success, and it's all about foundational principles, not one of which is quick or easy.
Right.
It's all about hard work and consistency and character. And that's really honestly where Uncle Mark comes from, and hopefully Matthew and I learned a little bit of that, and we kind of try to bring that forward in our music and the way we carry ourselves. But you know, I just kind of, Tom, I feel like I'm a man that was born out of time. I'm definitely an analog man in a digital world.
That said, are you going to be recording analog when you do the new stuff, or are you doing digital and bumping it down?
I do both. I actually, I have been collecting vintage recording equipment my whole career. So my home studio is really wonderful. It's minimalistic. There's not a ton of gear, but the gear that I've got is absolutely classic analog. Vintage Neve recording equipment is what I've got. Mm-hmm. Makes anything sound great. And then eventually, like for convenience, I'll put that into my computer and I'll be able to do my edits and all that stuff. But it starts out analog, and ultimately I'm mastering analog. So it's a combination of both.
Okay. Now, since you own all the rights wisely, one of the things I remember learning from Frankie Avalon was there's two words. One is show, one is business. You got to be good at both to succeed. And you guys have done that with the formation of Stone Canyon Records. You're now controlling your music wisely. That said, you own the rights to a lot of this stuff. Are we going to see it start coming out on vinyl, since vinyl seemingly is back? And I'm excited about it because I own two record stores now since the last time we talked.
Oh, and hey, look, you're talking to a guy with a vintage Marantz 2260, and I have the old analog, you know, JBL speakers with the orange grills on them. And when I listen to my vinyl, I've got a listening space in my house. And that's, I mean, I listen to Peter Frampton the way he's supposed to be listened to.
Right.
So, I love that stuff, and it was an honor to actually have After the Rain come out on collector grade vinyl. And it sounds different. And you know what I explain to people, like, especially I've got three daughters, and what I explain to them about listening to vinyl and why it's so cool is that it's the actual inconvenience of it all that's the point, because it forces you
to get up,
to be present in the moment. And you know, walk across the room when that side of the album is over and flip it over and put the needle down again and do that. You're not multitasking when you're listening to vinyl.
Right.
And that's what I love about it. You know, when you're talking about music, and I think the reason why we all love it so much is because great music takes us all to a different place. It takes us out of our bodies. It takes us out of our houses and the cities that we live in, the jobs that, you know, some have been better than others clearly throughout our lives. And it takes us to a different place where we can escape. That's why we love it so much. And that's the one thing that's been kind of a drag the last 20 years or so is that, you know, we were growing up, music was the point. Music was the main event. You know, you get excited about your favorite band coming out with record, you go down to the record store, you buy it, you rush it home, you'd pull out the album art and you'd read the lyric sheets and all that stuff while you're listening to the album for the first time. And it was a real experience. And I try to explain to my daughters, you don't understand how cool that actually really was. Like for you guys, you got short attention spans, you're TikToking all day, and I get that, and that's fine. But there's something wonderful about being forced to take an hour out of your life to escape into your music. You just, it feels good. And they've actually, funny, they've actually started listening to vinyl themselves and getting into the ritual of it, because it is a ritual. I love it too. And I think in this crazy world that we live in, it is really logical that people would get back to vinyl. And get back to the experience and the relishing in the inconvenience of vinyl, because you know what, it makes music the point again.
Right, right. I got to ask you. I know you guys put out your dad's stuff in the box set a number of years ago, and your brother Sam was one of the archivists on that, along with your sister Tracy. How are they doing? Are they still active? I know Tracy went through some health issues, and I don't know if she's back in the business. If Sam has evolved into more things, or what's going on?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, it's kind of strange. I don't really keep up to date with the goings on of Tracy and with Sam, because Matthew and I live out here in Nashville, Tennessee. And, with what we're doing, it is a daily slog going out there and making music and running a record company and doing all that. You know, and also we all have kids and families and stuff. So we touch base with Sam and Tracy, you know, a couple times a year, and they're out there in California doing what Californians do that I don't understand. So
you were one of them.
But I've been here for almost 30 years.
Wow!
I actually left California a long, long time ago, because the California I grew up with as a baby, going down to Laguna Beach and stuff, it was a very, very different time and a very different place. It has really, really changed. It's not the California that I grew up in anymore, and I think a lot of people are leaving it. And I think Sam and Tracy are just kind of. They're kind of comfortable there and doing what Californians do. It's totally cool, but I just, I don't have an easy answer for you. I know Tracy is really not acting anymore. She's been doing a lot of voiceover work. And I think one of the shows that she's been doing is NCIS. She's been doing voiceover work for NCIS. And I could not tell you other than raising a little boy what Sam is doing right now. I really don't know, but I know he's not active in the business.
Okay. Well, you guys are keeping busy for everybody, I'll tell you that. Firstborn Sons, the new project. Look for a single in the summer. A full album, I'm expecting, will follow in fall, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. Shortly thereafter.
And then a tour with a virtual backing band. And is that going to be U.S., worldwide? Do you know yet? I mean, is it a little too premature to decide?
We're going to start. I mean, our focus is always going to be U.S. first. You know, this is a record made by an American band, and it's an American art form for Americans first and foremost. So if it catches fire internationally, that's really great, but that's going to be the white walls and the curb scrapers on the Cadillac as far as I'm concerned.
All right. One last question, and that is I'm going to ask you to see into the future and touch souls with your dad. He's been gone a long time. He was at the peak of his career, in my opinion, as far as evolution. He was constantly moving forward, didn't look to the past. Where do you think he would have gone creatively and musically if we had not lost him? Would he have performed rock, country, production? Would he have gone back into acting? I always try to guess what he would have done. And I was just wondering if you had any clues.
I do. Well, I know that music was always his first love. You know, people would think, okay, he was on that television show. He was in that movie Rio Bravo with John Wayne. And he was an actor that happened to make music. It was actually the opposite, as his life will testify to. I mean, mm-hmm. this is a guy who was, you know, doing 300 dates a year up until the day he died. And he loved it. And at any time, he could have acquiesced and gone to make, you know, TV and movies and stuff, because that's an arguably far easier life.
Right.
To lead. You know, you have a schedule and you sleep in your own bed, you know, at night and all that. But, you know, he was a troubadour and he loved making music. So I think the answer is he would be making music primarily. He would be doing the occasional movie or TV role if it you know, landed on him. And I think the kind of music he'd be making is he'd be making country music, much like the Eagles.
Okay.
You know, that same kind of path. He would be doing that. He'd be playing the big shows, and he'd be going out with great players, and he would be doing that. I know what he would not be doing. He would not be resting on his laurels and just playing the oldies. He
right.
would give people those songs that they would come to expect and love, but he'd always be making new music.
Okay.
And I do know that, I mean, Matthew and I talk about this all the time. If our dad had not passed away when we were 18 years old, Matthew and I would have wound up in our dad's band. I would have been the drummer. Matthew would have been the bass player. Those were our instruments that we were playing back in the day. And we loved playing with our dad and be having a great life doing that. But I don't think the After the Rain record would ever have happened.
Okay.
I don't think I ever would have been forced to take the mic and do the lead singing and learn how to play guitar and all that stuff. But we'd be in a country band together and we'd be backing up our dad and he'd be doing a great job.
All
and
right.
he probably looked like he was 25 still.
Probably.
You know, really annoying.
Yeah, you guys always had that good look. So on that note, we're gonna leave you with After the Rain, the title track of the album that turned 30 last year, a.k.a. this year. Gunner, thank you so much for joining me once again.
Hey, Tom, as always, thank you for all of the support. And to all the listeners out there, on behalf of the entire Nelson family, thank you for giving us the greatest job in the world for the last 100 years.
All right. MatthewandGunnerNelson.com is where you can find them. Adios, everybody. Chef Nick coming up with Let's Eat after this.